Assassin. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, thankfully, I have a voice today because last night went and saw Madonna in Houston and pretty much was jamming my ass off and didn't really have much of a voice afterwards. So I was kind of worried I wouldn't have one today, but I did. And by the way, Madonna kicked fucking ass as usual. I get to see her two more times, by the way, so pretty excited about that. But and speaking of music, I did drop my third single from my upcoming album, Suck My Dick. Single is called Kill 'Em With Crazy. You can check that out on my official website, katietrop.net, where you can also find out the katietrop.net or the Sports Talk with Trop preferred sports books. If you just hit the Sports Talk with Trop tab, you will see right at the top of the page there is a banner that says Sports Talk with Trop's preferred sports books. Click that button and you will see some of the preferred sports books that you could sign up with and gamble your life away if you choose to do so, and of course in participating states only. Anyways, let's get into the March Madness. I don't know about y'all, but my bracket is pretty much completely busted. I only have Purdue left, which is my champion, but basically this my bracket's looking pretty rough right now. My final four was Iowa State versus Baylor, who are both out. And then Kentucky versus Purdue, and Kentucky's out. So all I've got left is Purdue, and boom. And we had some upsets last night in the Western bracket with Alabama taking down North Carolina, 89-87. And then Clemson taking down Arizona, 77-72. So both of them have moved on to the Elite Eight, and they will be playing each other on Saturday, Alabama versus Clemson. And that's going to be a pretty crazy one, just because Alabama's been a they've been a very shockingly dominating tournament team, for sure. And I honestly would not be surprised at this rate to see them make the Final Four. But we'll see, though. Clemson's been playing the upset special as well this entire run. But I just am looking at Alabama, and they took out a really good North Carolina team. And then, they've really pretty much annihilated everybody along the way here. I mean, in the first round, they won 100, they scored 109 points. You know what I'm saying? So this is a team that is pretty damn good. So we'll see what happens in that matchup. I'm going to take Alabama in that matchup just because they've been so dominating lately. Honestly, wouldn't be shocked to see them win at all. But we'll see, obviously, that we have a ways to go before we get there. And then we also had UConn took out San Diego State, and I mean in dominating fashion. So UConn has moved on. And then Illinois took out Iowa State, and that was another close one. They took them out 72-69. So in the East bracket, the Elite Eight matchup is going to be UConn versus Illinois. And I'm going to go with UConn in that one because UConn's been probably the most dominating college basketball team all season. So at this point, I mean, the way they beat San Diego State, or really the way they beat everybody at this rate. I mean, I think they've won by 20 points, at least by a 20-point margin in every single one of their matchups right now. So UConn kind of difficult to pick against at this point in time. Then moving on to tonight's matchups, we have Houston versus Duke. I'm going to take Houston in that one just because that's who I was taking to begin with in my beginning bracket. And I do think they're a better team, but it's definitely going to be a good matchup, I imagine. Then we have NC State versus Marquette. I didn't have either of these teams winning in this matchup. I actually had Kentucky when my bracket first started, so I'm actually going to go with Marquette in this one. They've been playing solid basketball. Not that NC State hasn't, but I just feel like Marquette's the better team. Then we also have Purdue playing Gonzaga. Since I have Purdue as my champion, of course, I'm rolling with Purdue today. And, I mean, they've also been just dominating this tournament as well. And then we also have last matchup is going to be Creighton versus Tennessee. And I actually had this matchup in my beginning bracket. And I'm going to go ahead and stick with Creighton because that's who I had to begin with. So I don't know about y'all, but my bracket is busted. And
There ain't no way to fix it at this point. Moving on to the NBA, we had some crazy games this week. We are getting closer and closer to the playoffs. So some teams are making big runs, and some teams are starting to fall apart. And I've been talking about the Boston Celtics. You know, they've been dominating the regular season so far, but it's all about the playoffs because they've choked the last couple of seasons in the playoffs. And so it's just kind of like, you know, they've dominated the regular season, but come playoff time, where the fuck are they? And right now, they are starting to blow a few big games here this week, starting with Monday night. They lost to the Atlanta Hawks 120 to 118. As a matter of fact, not only did they lose, but Boston blew a 30-point lead at one point in this game. And it was just terrible for Boston. I mean, they completely collapsed in this one. They were just trying to shoot up any old shot towards the end of the game. And it was just bad. And I mean, this Atlanta Hawks team is not that great, but they were able to come back from 30 points down and take out the Boston Celtics. And that's not what you want to do heading into the playoffs. Then on Tuesday night, speaking of blown leads, another blown lead in this one on the opposite side that I was happy with this blown lead because it was my Lakers taking down the Milwaukee Bucks 128 to 124. Milwaukee blew a 19-point lead and it ended up going into double overtime. And, you know, as this game went on, there were a couple of times in this game where I was pretty close to changing the channel because Milwaukee was dominating the first three quarters. Then all of a sudden, the fourth quarter, the Lakers just started to get on a run and they just started to knock down shots. You know, AD was having an excellent game. You really got to give it up to the dude. I was really shocked when they went into overtime because I was like, well, shit, AD looks gassed heading into overtime. I was like, there's no way they're going to win if we go into overtime. Well, it turns out we go into double overtime. He still looked gassed, but he made some huge defensive moves. He made some huge blocks and knocked down all the shots and really just had a huge night. He had a double-double, as a matter of fact, 34 points and 23 rebounds. And Austin Reeves had a triple-double with 29 points, 14 rebounds, and 10 assists. So it was a huge blown lead by the Bucks. But the Lakers really just took over in the fourth quarter and then just dominated the double overtime and were able to get the win. And that was a huge win as well for the Lakers with no LeBron as well. There was no LeBron playing that night. It was all on AD and Reeves, and this Lakers team really just dominated. Then also on Tuesday night, speaking of domination, the Dallas Mavericks dominated the Sacramento Kings 132 to 96. Luka almost didn't play this game. He was a game time decision with his Achilles. He's got an irritation down there, and you know it's getting close to playoff time, so you don't want to really just play him for no reason. But at the end of the day, the Mavericks are right now they're fighting for their playoff spot. Really, we'll get to the playoffs here in a bit, but right now they're actually in the playoffs and not in the play-in, and so you'd much rather be in the playoffs rather than the play-in. And so Luka, of course, played and dropped a double-double. As a matter of fact, he had 28 points and 11 rebounds, and he had the 26 of those 28 points in the first half. So he really had a solid game. Mavericks overall had a solid game, and then the Kings just got smashed. Like I said, this team is very weird with the way they play this year. It's either they absolutely will dominate you or they will absolutely get dominated. There really isn't a middle road with this team, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens come playoff time, if they even make the playoffs, because they're kind of one of those teams that's kind of out there in the balance, and then losing to the Mavericks, that could cost you some seeding. And then on Wednesday night, the Phoenix Suns just took it to the Denver Nuggets 104-97. Kevin Durant had a huge game, 30 points and 13 rebounds. It was really just a solid game from the Phoenix Suns. They really just exploded offensively, and then just KD really took over the game when he needed to, and they just got a big win over the Denver Nuggets, who are still the best team in the West. So not really a big loss for them, but a big win for the Suns. Then last night, Boston got beat again by the Atlanta Hawks. They lost 123 to 122, this time in overtime. DeJounte Murray had 44 points and actually had the game-winning shot in overtime, and just yet another big loss for the Celtics. These are two big losses in a row to an Atlanta Hawks team that's just not that good. I mean, they're in line for the playoffs. They really could use the win, but Boston falling apart, getting close to the playoffs. You really don't want to do that. Yeah, the Eastern Conference is pretty much theirs for the taking. But if they start slipping up, along the way here, they are not going to be a team you look at with a lot of confidence. And then the last game last night that we had that was also exciting was the New Orleans Pelicans versus the Milwaukee Bucks. The Pelicans got the win 107-100. Zion had a huge game, made some clutch free throws, ended up with 28 points in the end. And the Pelicans are just really, they are getting, I mean, they've had a really solid season just overall. But over the last month and a half, they've really found their identity and they just really keep it moving. Despite Brandon Ingram's injury, they really just look solid right now, playing some good basketball. It gets a good team, too. I mean, the Milwaukee Bucks are very Jekyll and Hyde all season long, but still, to beat one of the best teams in the East. And pretty much the Pelicans dominated the game for the most part. They had the lead for, I believe, the whole game, and if not the majority of the game, for sure. But the Pelicans got the win, and the Bucks got yet another loss. So it's not a good week for the Boston Celtics or the Milwaukee Bucks, and the Eastern Conference just not looking that good, but the Western Conference is stacked. So let's get to the NBA playoffs and how everything's looking out there right now. Beginning with the Western Conference, right now the number one seed is the Denver Nuggets. Number two overall seed is the Minnesota Timberwolves. Number three is the Oklahoma City Thunder. Number four is the Los Angeles Clippers. Number five is the New Orleans Pelicans. And number six are the Dallas Mavericks. And on the play-in side of things, number seven seed Phoenix Suns. Number eight seed Sacramento Kings. Number nine seed Lakers. And number 10 seed the Golden State Warriors. Then over on the Eastern Conference side of things, number one seed Boston Celtics, number two the Milwaukee Bucks. So right there, even though they both had a bad week, you know what? They're still the number one and two seed in the Eastern Conference. So that's fine, but who knows what's going to happen throughout the rest of the playoffs. Then the number three seed is the New York Knicks, number four seed the Cleveland Cavaliers, number five Orlando Magic, and number six the Indiana Pacers. And then on the play-in side of things, number seven seed would be the Miami Heat. Number eight seed, the Philadelphia 76ers. Number nine seed, the Chicago Bulls. And number 10 seed would be the Atlanta Hawks. So those couple of wins they got this week against the Boston Celtics really helped boost them up into the playoff picture. And speaking of playoff pictures, the last three episodes, I have done my 2024 MLB season predictions on each division, who I believe was going to win each division. So now, let's talk about the postseason and how I think the postseason is going to shape out with all the teams that I think are going to end up there. So let's start in the American League with, I believe, the number one overall seed is going to be the Baltimore Orioles. You know, like I said, I feel like they're going to be one of the hottest teams in the league and just continue to build off of what they did last year. And I also think they're going to win their division. Number two overall seed, I have the Houston Astros. You know, I don't really expect them to lose a step. As a matter of fact, they got even better with the addition of Josh Hader. Then the number three seed, I have the Minnesota Twins. It's just they're in a terrible division, and they're just the better of the teams in that division. But I really wouldn't be shocked if any one of those teams ended up with that division. But I'm going with Minnesota in that one. So then my wild cards would be number four seed would be the Toronto Blue Jays. I just feel like they're a team that's finally going to put it together this year and make some noise, at least in the postseason. Then my number five seed, I have the Texas Rangers. They are the defending champs. I don't expect them to really lose a step. It's just they do have some injuries to overcome with Scherzer and DeGrom. They're both on the injured list right now to start the season, so that could kind of potentially hold you back from winning their division, and they are in one of the toughest divisions in baseball. So I just kind of feel like the Rangers, you know, they were a wild card team last year when they won the World Series anyway, so it's not like it really matters how you get into the playoffs. It's just you need to get there. And then rounding out the American League and at the number six seed, I do have the New York Yankees. I have a lot of questions about them just because of their injuries. I mean, we already have Cole, who's going to be starting off on the injured list. He's not expected back until around June, so they got a while without him. But if the rest of the guys in the starting pitching, you know, they do have a solid starting pitching lineup. It's just, there's just so many questions with them. Are they going to be able to stay healthy? Soto, I do think, is going to make a huge impact on them offensively, but it's really just their pitching is where I have a lot of their concerns. And then you've got Cole beginning the season on the injured list. That's just not what you want, but I do still have them making the playoffs. Then in the National League, my number one overall seed is the Atlanta Braves. I just think they're the best team in baseball, hands down. Then the number two seed I have is the Los Angeles Dodgers. Also just one of the top most talented teams. Can't really overlook what they've built. And, you know, they picked up Shohei Ohtani in the offseason. So that just adds to their even more stellar offense. But they do have a lot of questions at the starting pitching position. We'll see what happens as the season unfolds. But I think they have a lot of questions at the starting pitching position. Then at number three in the National League, I have the St. Louis Cardinals winning their division. It's just really, they had a bad year last year, so I wouldn't be shocked to see them bounce back and have a solid year this year. So my wild card teams in the National League, number four seed, the Philadelphia Phillies. They're just a good team. They've got a great starting pitching core. They've got a good built bullpen. They've got really solid offense. So I just kind of feel like they're going to be right back in the mix of things. Then the number five seed, I have the New York Mets. And I'm not really that sold on them. It's just I was looking over the National League and they do have a pretty decent roster. It's just their starting pitching is pretty terrible, but I wouldn't be shocked to see them back their way into the playoffs. And then my number six seed I have is the Arizona Diamondbacks. They also have a nice young core coming off of a really good year last year. They went to the World Series. They did lose, but they still had a solid year, great regular season, and were able to beat some really fantastic teams in a great postseason run. So I won't be shocked to see them right back in it. So I've got them in at the number six seed. So my AL wildcard matchups would be the Minnesota Twins versus the New York Yankees. I have the Yankees winning that matchup. And then the Toronto Blue Jays versus the Texas Rangers. And I have the Blue Jays winning that matchup. Just because, I feel like the Blue Jays are going to be one of those teams that really finally puts it together and has a very consistent year. Then my National League wildcard matchups would be the St. Louis Cardinals versus the Arizona Diamondbacks. I have St. Louis winning that matchup. And then the Philadelphia Phillies versus the New York Mets. And I have the New York Mets winning that matchup just to throw a wrench into things there. Then my ALDS matchup is the Baltimore Orioles versus the New York Yankees. I have the Orioles winning that matchup. And then the Houston Astros versus the Toronto Blue Jays. I have the Blue Jays winning that matchup. Then in the NLDS, I have the Atlanta Braves versus the New York Mets. I have the Braves winning that matchup. And then the Dodgers versus the St. Louis Cardinals. I have the Cardinals winning that matchup. So my ALCS, I have the Baltimore Orioles versus the Toronto Blue Jays. And I have Baltimore moving on and winning that matchup. You know, that would be a great matchup because it's two division teams, two division rivals who know each other very well. So I just kind of feel like it would be an excellent series. But I have a lot of belief in Baltimore this year. So I'm going with Baltimore to represent the American League in the World Series. And then my NLCS is the Atlanta Braves versus the St. Louis Cardinals. And I have Atlanta moving on to the World Series for the National League. So my World Series matchup is the Baltimore Orioles versus the Atlanta Braves. And my overall champ is going to be the Atlanta Braves. I just think they're too talented and too good. And I mean, really, I feel like the only thing that gets in the way of their championship, of course, is injuries. But that's really the case for every team. And then just them potentially getting in their own way because that just tends to happen throughout the season. But they have a great roster. They're going to have zero issues scoring offense. They're going to have a great defensive infield and outfield. You got Acuna coming off of an MVP season. You got Spencer Strider coming off of a fantastic season as well. I do have questions with their pitching in a couple areas. I don't think they have a lot of depth, but overall, I expect the Braves to be one of the best teams in the league, and I've got them winning it all. All right, so let's move on. Getting back to my lists. You know, I skipped it last week because I was doing the baseball predictions. So I went ahead and took a break from the list last week. But we're back at it with the NFL GOATs of each decade. So we're moving on to the top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1990s. And this one was, I mean, they've all been pretty difficult. But this one for me was probably the most difficult because the 90s is when I started to watch football. And so there are so many players. I was like, oh, shit, I got to leave him out. Oh, shit, I got to leave him out. Oh, I got to put him in. Like, it was really difficult. Now, number one and two were not difficult at all. I knew I was going to put them at number one and two because they were the two players that absolutely dominated the 90s. I will say that some of this list is going to piss off some of you Cowboys haters because I know you all like to act like the the dynasty Cowboys of the 90s was some like Fugazi team when they're one of the most dominating dynasties ever. And you always like to make excuses up for all the players and act like, oh, yeah. Emmitt Smith had a great offensive line. He would have been nothing without it. Yeah, well, guess what? That's the case for everybody. So shut the fuck up and get over it. So let's get on to my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1990s, beginning with number 10. And if you know me, you know this is my favorite player of all time in football, and there was no way I was leaving him off the list. Quite frankly, you're lucky I didn't put him at number one, because my heart wanted to put him at number one, but my head would not put him at number one. But I went ahead and put Troy Aikman at number 10 because, A, he's my favorite player, and this is my list, and I can put him wherever I want. Also, he was one of the most dominating quarterbacks of this era, all he did was win. And as a matter of fact, he won at every level that he ever played in his entire career at quarterback, from Pee-wee League to high school to college, all the way to the pros. But all y'all like to talk about how overrated he is because, you know, he had all these great talent surrounding him, because no other football player in the history of sports has ever had that happen to him, right? Yep, no, only Troy Aikman. Well, he is number 10 on my list, quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, played from 1989 to 2000, won Super Bowl 27, 28, and 30. This is one of the reasons why he's on there, because when you actually dominate the Super Bowls, that is all that matters. He was actually the Super Bowl MVP of Super Bowl 27. His career passing yards, 32,942 yards with 165 touchdowns. Literally one of the most efficient quarterbacks of all time, and just dominated the league. Just dominated the league, and like I said, my favorite football player, and there was no way I was making this list and not including him somewhere on it. Like I said, y'all are lucky I put him all the way down at 10, because, like I said, heart would have put him at number 1. Moving on to number 9 on my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1990s, John Randall, one of the most fun defenders to ever watch. He was absolutely insane. The defensive tackle of the Minnesota Vikings, well, that's who he mostly played for, from 1990 to 2000. His career stats are 556 total tackles, 137 and a half sacks, 29 forced fumbles, 11 fumble returns, or 11 fumble recoveries, one interception, and one touchdown. He is a 6-time first-team All-Pro from 1993 to 1998, and he led the league in sacks in 1997 and just was an all-around badass motherfucker. He was hilarious. He would say the most insane shit to some people on the field, and he just was nuts. You would just see him on the sideline, and you could just see what an insane motherfucker he was, and I really enjoyed watching him. It was actually kind of hard to put him down at number 9 because he was so good, but there are a few other defenders who are ranked above him on this list, for me at least. So then at number 8 on my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1990s, Reggie White. Now this is the first repeat because he was on the 1980s list, and now he's on the 1990s list. Now he really mostly dominated the 80s. The majority of his dominance was definitely 80s. When he went to the Packers in the 90s, he played with the Packers from 93 to 98, and he actually won the Super Bowl with them in 31, but they weren't as dependent on him as the Eagles were. And, you know, he obviously was the guy on defense, but they actually had quite a few pieces on the defensive side of the ball that really were able to make big plays, just like Reggie White. So most of his dominance was in the 80s, but he still dominated the 90s, and I couldn't leave him off. Of course, his career sacks, 198, or his career stats, 198 sacks, 33 forced fumbles, 3 interceptions, and 2 touchdowns, and just one of the overall greatest defensive players you will ever have seen play. There are more stats, of course. I didn't rattle off all of the ones from the 80s just because I already went off on those stats, so go listen to that episode if you want to hear more Reggie White stats. But he was just one of the most dominating figures, and when he played for the Eagles in the 80s, he was fantastic, and then he went over to the Packers and did the same thing in dominating fashion, and he actually ended his career with the Carolina Panthers, so he did play for a couple other teams, but he was mostly known for his time with the Eagles and the Packers, and in the 90s, it was all about the Packers. Then at number 7 on my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1990s, I have Bruce Smith. It was hard to put Bruce Smith down this far, but I had to. And actually, you know, I was going between these three, Randall, White, and Bruce Smith. I just was going back and forth, back and forth. And then finally, I looked at Bruce Smith's stats, and I was like, come on. Really, there was no more dominating defensive end than Bruce Smith in the 90s. And so I went with Bruce Smith above the last two. But it was really hard, too. When you pit them against each other, they were all badass motherfuckers. But Bruce Smith has the resume. He was the defensive end for the Buffalo Bills from 1985 to 1999. His career totals are 200 sacks, 2 safeties, 43 forced fumbles, 15 fumble recoveries, 2 interceptions, and 1 touchdown. And the 200 sacks is actually the NFL record. So, you know, that alone to me was like, okay, I got to put him above Randall and Reggie White. Just, you know, I wanted to put White in there just because he had the Super Bowl, but then I'm like, sorry, the 200 career sacks being the NFL leader, I'm sorry, that just puts you above everybody. He also was Defensive Player of the Year in 1990 and 1996, 9-time First Team All-Pro, 1987, 1988, 1990, then 1992 through 1997. A couple other records he also owns in the league. One player of having at least 1 sack a season. He did that for 19 seasons straight. And then 10-plus sacks a season, he did that for 13 seasons straight. And so those are both NFL records, along with his career 200 sacks is also an NFL record. And really, Bruce Smith was just the there were a lot of leaders on that Bills team, of course, because, you know, they had Jim Kelly. But I just kind of feel like their backbone, their heartbeat was Bruce Smith, and they went as that dude went. Then at number 6 on my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1990s, Barry Sanders, running back for the Detroit Lions. He played from 1989 to 1988. His career marks are 15,269 rushing yards, 99 rushing touchdowns, 2,921 receiving yards, and 10 receiving touchdowns. He was the MVP in 1997, 2-time Offensive Player of the Year in 1994, 1997. He was a Rookie of the Year in 1989, 6-time First Team All-Pro from 89 to 91, 94, 95, and 97. And he led the league in rushing 4 times in 1990, 94, 96, 97. Definitely one of the most dominating running backs of this time. Definitely exciting. But I know a lot of people are going to be very upset because, yes, he is behind Emmitt Smith on this list. And you can get upset about it all you want. But guess what? Emmitt Smith showed up in the postseason. Barry Sanders did not. The end of that argument. You can suck a fat one. But Barry Sanders was still great. He was still exciting. And absolutely one of the most dominating players of the 1990s. So he had to go on this list. Then at number 5 on my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1990s, Deion Sanders. He was a cornerback for the Atlanta Falcons from 1989 to 1993. He was with the San Francisco 49ers in 1994. Then he played with the Cowboys from 95 to 1999. And then he played for a couple other teams as well, the Redskins and the Ravens, to end his career. But, I mean, really, the thing about Deion Sanders is he is one of the most unique players football has ever seen. He was a 3-tool player where he played defense. Of course, that was his primary position, was cornerback. But he also would play wide receiver sometimes on offense. And then he was a special teams beast on punt returns and kick returns. So he not only was a fantastic cornerback, I mean, you really could not score on Deion Sanders. He was one of the definition of shutdown cornerback is Deion Sanders. But the fact that he could play offense and special teams, and once he went to the Cowboys, that's where the offensive side of things really took off for him. It wasn't really just he was thrown in every once in a while. I mean, he made some key plays in Super Bowl 30 on the offensive side of the ball. So some of Deion's career stats are 53 interceptions, 10 forced fumbles, 13 fumble recoveries, 10 defensive touchdowns. On punt returns, he's got 2,199 yards with 6 touchdowns. On kick returns, he's got 3,523 yards and 3 touchdowns. And on offense, he has a total of 10 touchdowns. So the guy didn't just play all three sides of the ball. He actually played them well, too. He was dominating on defense. He was actually dominating on special teams. He was one of the most electric players on special teams, really. Just watch him. And then offensively, he would make some big, big plays, and you could always count on Deion Sanders to show up. He was a defensive player of the year in 1994. He's a six-time first-team All-Pro from 92 to 94, and then from 96 to 98. And he was also so athletic that he played baseball as well. At the same time when he played in the NFL, he was actually the first athlete ever to play in an NFL game and an MLB game in one night. Now, unfortunately, the baseball game, they didn't play him. He just suited up. But basically, he played his football game, flew out to the baseball game, and showed up and actually was ready to play, but they just did not play him. And but, I mean, that's he played baseball while he played football. That is how talented and unique Deion Sanders is. That's why when I say, man, if you missed out on Deion Sanders, I just feel bad for you because you missed greatness. And another great thing about Deion Sanders, and it's one of my favorite Deion Sanders moments because it was when he was in a Cowboys uniform. It is called the Deion game. It is when it is a Monday Night Football game against the New York Giants in which he would have an interception for a touchdown, a punt return for a touchdown. He would set up the Cowboys in good field position after making a huge play on offense at the wide receiver position. And he would also have a nice kick return as well. So it was literally a game in which he had a hand in just about every game-winning drive or every scoring drive in that game. And I mean, really, he was just something else. No matter who he played for, he was just something else. And he had one of the greatest careers ever, and I enjoyed it. Then at number four on my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1990s, Steve Young, the quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers. He played for the Niners from 1987 to 1999. He, of course, started his career with the Buccaneers and would end it with the 49ers. He actually would start out as Montana's backup, and then they would just go back and forth for a few years playing the rotating quarterback. And then they decided to go with Steve Young. And He is a three-time Super Bowl champion, but two of those Super Bowls, he was the backup. So for 23 and 24, he was the backup. But for 29, not only did the Niners win that one, but he was the MVP and actually scored the most touchdowns. It was a Super Bowl record at the time, six touchdowns. I believe Tom Brady has tied it, of course. I mean, if it ain't Tom Brady, who the fuck else is it? But regardless, he did have six touchdowns, and it was really just one of his most dominating performances ever. But, I mean, just in the 90s, Steve Young really just dominated this league. And also, it was funny, too, because, you know, Niners fans, of course, loved Joe Montana, and so it took a while for them to warm up to Steve Young when he became the starter, but once he finally won Super Bowl 29, I think they were finally over it. His career yards, 33,124 passing yards, 232 passing touchdowns, 4,239 rushing yards, and 43 rushing touchdowns. That's one of the things about Steve Young is not only was he great with his arm, but he would make some huge plays running and would always put his body on the line. I mean, if you remember Steve Young, the dude would practically get a concussion every other game, it felt like. So, but that's just because that's the way he played. He was a two-time MVP in 92 and 94, Offensive Player of the Year in 92, three-time first team All-Pro 1992 through 1994, and he led the league in touchdowns four times in 1992, 1993, 94, and 1998. Then at number three on my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1990s, Brett Favre, the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers from 1992 to 2007. He would, of course, go on to play for the Jets and the Vikings to end his career, but we are talking about his domination in the 90s. And honestly, really living through the 90s, and it really does pain me to say this, because growing up, I hated Brett Favre. I respect the shit out of Brett Favre, but I hate the Packers. I could never root for the Packers, and as a Cowboys fan, you just hated the Packers and Brett Favre. So I could not stand the dude, but to overlook his greatness at the time, I cannot do such a thing. Like I said, I respect the dude's career way too much, and he was, in my opinion, the quarterback of the 90s. Even though Steve Young, very dominating. Once I get to Brett Favre's career numbers, you will see his career numbers are actually even more stellar than Steve Young's, which is crazy, but also at the same time, Favre was a starter his entire career, whereas Young wasn't. And then Aikman didn't have nearly the blowout stats that Favre had, and he was more of just a winner, whereas Favre was the fun gunslinger that everybody just really liked at the time. But you really can't deny not only his greatness, but his popularity at the same time, because if you don't know, I'm taking that into account in my GOATs list here, is not just your popularity, but just you, if you were a face of the league, there was a reason why, and Brett Favre in the 90s was one of the many faces of the league. So his career stats. His career passing yards are 71,838 yards. Okay? I mean, right there. That's 71,000 passing yards in his career. As I said, Aikman's another quarterback on this list. He had 32,942, and Steve Young had 33,124. Brett Favre had 71,838 passing yards. So that right there, that stat alone puts him right up there. And then he had 508 touchdowns. So, come on, y'all. I had to put him up there. He also won Super Bowl 31, of course. He's a three-time MVP. And at the time, that he won it 3 years consecutively, and that was the first time that had ever happened in the league. He won 95, 96, and 97. Offensive Player of the Year in 1995. Three-time first-team All-Pro, 1995 through 97. Led the league in touchdowns four times from 95, 96, 97, and 2003. He also had a record 297 consecutive starts. So that's another thing. He was just known as the Iron Man. He would get the weirdest injuries, and he would still play. So, you know, even though I hated the dude, I still got to put him up there in those career stats. When I was going back, because I was flipping back and forth between him and Steve Young, just because they both really dominated. You know, they won MVPs, and they were pretty much the guys for quite some time there. But then once I looked at Favre's stats, I was like, sorry, Young. Sorry, dude. I gotta put stupid-ass Favre above you. And I did it. So had to do it because, you can't deny the greatness there. And that was one of the things about Favre, just a total Iron Man and just absolutely dominated the league in the 90s. Then at number two on my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1990s, another guy who is a repeat on this list, and that would be Jerry Rice. Of course, I had him on my 1980s list, so I'm not going to go through all of his career stats since he has a million and a half stats, and I already rattled them off in the 1980s episode, so go back and listen to that if you want to hear me rattle off some more on Jerry Rice. But obviously, San Francisco of the wide receiver of the San Francisco 49ers during the 90s from 1985 to 2000, and then, of course, he would end his career with going to Oakland and the Seahawks and the practice squad, I believe, with Denver. But anyways, he's known as the Niners, of course. Three-time Super Bowl champ, Super Bowl 23, 24, 29, and was the MVP of 23. Offensive Player of the Year in 1987 and 1993. 10-time first-team All-Pro from 1986 to 1990. And then 1992 to 1996. My guess is that 1991 season where he wasn't a first-team All-Pro, I'm betting he was injured that season. His career stats are 22,895 receiving yards, which is an NFL record, and then 197 receiving touchdowns, which is also an NFL record. And really, Jerry Rice owns just about every receiving record you possibly could own. He's basically like Tom Brady, where it's like, oh, cool, look at that. Endless record, 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 record. That's why I'm not going to read off all of his shit again, because I already did it on the last list. Now at number one on my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1990s, Emmitt Smith, running back of the Dallas Cowboys. He was a Dallas Cowboys running back from 1990 to 2002. He would end his career with the Arizona Cardinals, but really nobody dominated the 1990s more than Emmitt Smith. First of all, I would like to say, because this has always been an argument, Barry Sanders is better than Emmitt Smith, and people like to, like I said, they like to, you know, make up all the excuses of, oh, well, he had this great offensive line. Oh, he had this, he had that. Well, apparently y'all don't remember the 1993 season in which he held out for the first two games of the season, and the Cowboys would go 0-2 to start the season. And then when he re-signs his deal, all of a sudden they go on this magic little winning streak and go on to win the Super Bowl. By the way, he won the MVP that year. So y'all need to learn this thing called facts and open your eyes and get over your haterade, because Emmitt Smith was the most dominating player of the 1990s. He won three Super Bowls, 27, 28, and 30. He was the MVP of Super Bowl 28. His career stats are rushing yards, 18,355 rushing yards. P.S., all-time leading rusher. That is the NFL record that I'm going to put on record right now. Nobody's breaking that record, at least at this rate. With the way they treat running backs in this league, I don't really see a running back able to have that kind of career where he dominates for that many years to even come close to 18,355 yards. So I'm betting Emmitt, if it gets broken, it's going to be a long-ass time before it gets broken. His career touchdowns, 164 career touchdowns, 3,224 receiving yards, and 11 receiving touchdowns. He's the MVP of 1993, Rookie of the Year of 1990, four-time first-team All-Pro from 92 to 95, four-time rushing leader, 91, 92, 93, and 95, three-time touchdown leader, 92, 94, 95, and then some of the records he owns, like I said, rushing yards and rushing touchdowns. Both of those are NFL records. And then also rushing attempts. He's got 4,409 rushing attempts, and that is also an NFL record. So y'all can hate all you want, but Emmitt Smith was the most dominating player in the 90s. He made the biggest impact on the dynasty of that era. And sorry, you turn on film from the 90s, all you see is Emmitt Smith running. He was dynamic. He was amazing. And you could talk about the offensive line, which was great. Don't get me wrong. That was a fantastic offensive line. But there were many games where Emmitt would get past that hole and you can't stop him. There were also games where he played with a dislocated shoulder. And like I said, the 93 season where he held out the first two games, that should tell you all what kind of an impact Emmitt Smith made on that team. Now, every player made an impact on that team, as they do with everyone, but Emmitt Smith was the face of the 90s, and he is my top 10 NFL GOAT of the 1990s. So my top 10 NFL GOATs of the 1990s is 10, Troy Aikman, 9, John Randall, 8, Reggie White, 7, Bruce Smith, 6, Barry Sanders, 5, Deion Sanders, 4, Steve Young, 3, Brett Favre, 2, Jerry Rice, and number 1, Emmitt Smith. All right, y'all, enjoy the rest of March Madness. We have baseball. Opening day was just yesterday, so we have basketball, pro basketball, college basketball, baseball, and just a shit ton of sports on tap. It's just fucking fantastic. So y'all enjoy the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.